Good morning. So, last time we went over some examples of building single cycle processors that implemented larger and larger subsets of our y86 instruction set. We sort of had this big idea that, well, you know, we have these components. We have a component that stores our registers values. We have a component that stores our instruction values. We have a component that stores our memory values that we access for our data accessing instructions, push, pop, MRMoveQ, RMoveQ, and so on. And sort of the key idea was that, well, different instructions need these kind of hooked up to each other in different ways. So we're going to use muxes to make those decisions. The mux is kind of our if-then in our processor. And most of making our processor is going to be having basically if this instruction do this for this piece of it, if another instruction do something else. And we mentioned, well, okay, we have these decisions, we have these components wired together, and we wanted to know about the timing. And in our single cycle design, we have components which store information. And those components work by looking at a clock signal. So we have a global clock signal. So our sort of notional clock signal looks something like this. And it has these rising edges, and that's all that our storage components pay attention to. They look for that, and when that happens, they copy their input to their storage. Everything else is going to work by continuously taking in inputs and computing some function of them. It's not going to be instantaneous because it's a physical thing. We can't have a physical thing that actually is instantaneous, but as its inputs change, its output's going to change with some short delay. And to make this work, we're going to need to set our clock signal long enough that those short delays add up to less time than our clock signal, so that the storage components, when that rising edge of the clock happens, the thing they copy is the actual final result and not some intermediate value that's yet to stabilize to what we actually want to compute for our instruction. So then I talked about our so-called stages, that our textbook divided up this processor into what they called stages. This is not a timing division because the timing is determined by how data flows from one component to the next and when these rising edges happen that triggers storage components. But this is useful for thinking about how to build our processor because we can look at a stage and there's some specific things that are done for each instruction in there. And we can say, okay, how does that work for, you know, each possible instruction? Just make a table and figure out what our muxes look like. And the stages our textbook talked about were fetch. So that straightforwardly includes getting the instruction. That's probably what most sounds like the name. It also includes splitting up the instruction into its components and computing the address of the next instruction, by which I mean the address of the instruction that follows in machine code, which might not be the next one we execute if, say, we have a jump. Then we have decode, which you think would be where we split up the instructions, but it's not a great name. It's where we read from the register file. We have execute, where we perform our arithmetic, our ALU operation, so add, subtract, XOR, and so on. The main one for the instruction, so if it's an add or subtract instruction, that's where we perform that. If it's a instruction that needs to compute a memory address to access memory, it's where we compute that memory address. This is also where we deal with condition codes, both setting them based on some arithmetic happening or interpreting them in order to figure out, does a conditional move happen? Does a conditional jump happen? Then we have our memory stage, which is where we access the data memory. So the fetch stage is where we access the instruction memory. but we have some instructions which need to access memory because the instruction says so, not because we need to read the instruction itself. So we do that. Work is, you know, is placed into this stage. Then write back is where we send a value to the register file to store, and PC updates where we decide what the PC should actually be. So I mentioned in fetch we compute the address of the instruction that follows the machine code, but that's not always the one we want to send with the PC. PC updates where we decide which of the several possible things we might use matters for this instruction. So questions about things I covered last time? Yes.
I just wanted to confirm, just
to make sure, that is there one clock cycle per line of code in assembly code? In the processor design we're using so far, yes. So we could build processors that don't work that way, and we'll talk about one probably as our last topic today. But that's the design we're starting with, is exactly one cycle per you know, one line of assembly code. Yes?
Also, in below, where it says single cycle processor timing, in the parentheses you have memory, registers, and register file. What's the difference between registers and the register file?
Questions, what's the difference between registers and a register file? So registers are things like the PC. So the register file is this thing which contains presumably a bunch of registers. We don't actually know if it's implemented that way, but presumably it's implemented with a bunch of registers, but its interface doesn't quite look like a single register like the PC. Right? We have to put in like a selector signal and a bunch of things, multiple selector signals. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay. So I believe last time we were looking at our instruction stages. And we had gotten to, I believe, this question about execute. Right, this is where I think we finished off. So mentioned execute, sort of the straightforward thing to say would be that, oh, for the execute instruction, I think of IOPQ. And that's, I'm going to need to add two values I read from registers together. And that's the common case, but this doesn't handle some things that we're also going to use that, you know, in our textbooks design that ALU for in your design, well, we don't check whether you have an ALU or not. So, but we're going to do some arithmetic. So we have some cases where we need to add a displacement. So for our rmove and rmove q, and some things where we need to add 8 for our stack operations. So we ended up with this setup for execute, where we have a way of getting in our immediate and 8. And our next stage would be memory. So in memory, we're going to do a read or write. So we first, we have, that means that we're going to need some input that tells us whether we read or write. And we're going to have computed an address in the execute stage. So if this is a stack accessing instruction, that's our stack computation. If this is a mrmove q, rmove q, that's our d plus rb. And we have some data to store if it's a store operation that, you know, comes from, you know, a register for push or a register for rmoveq. So this doesn't always work. Did we do this question last time here? I should have. Yes? No? Yes, we did it? Okay. What? I know we did it in the 5 p.m., but we did it here. Okay. And so what we discovered is that that's not quite correct, because we had to deal with call, where what we store.
We did number 1. I don't know about number 2.
Number 1? Oh, no, this is number 1 here. Yeah. This is the explanation of number 1. So we have to deal with for a call, we want to store not the value from a register, but the return address. The return address is the thing we compute and fetch, the address of the following thing in machine code. So that would be actually this thing here is going to be connected over there. I just didn't draw the whole line to make this diagram a little less messy. And we have to deal with pop and return, where we want to read from the current RSP value even though we're computing a new one. And because we can't like read RSP and then next cycle compute a new one, we have to do it all in one cycle. We have to have this sort of shortcut to get the unincremented value. And obviously to make this work, there's going to be something I haven't drawn to take the incremented value and actually use it more directly. Questions about where we are so far before we go on to our next stage, especially since this might be jogging people's memory from last time. Yes? Can I explain the call part? So the call instruction we think of as call foo is basically the same as if we have like a label next, right? It's basically the same as push the address of next and jump to foo. Like that's basically what call does. It pushes a return address, which is the next the instruction, wherever that is, and jumps to the thing you're calling. So this push operation, that's the store to memory, and we have to get our next into the data memory to store it. And so that's what that PC plus 9 is, which is this going to be the same as this valp over here. Does that answer your question? Okay, other questions? Points of confusion? So I want to make sure we're all up to speed before we go on to write back. So the question is, would the address that's written to the data memory or that comes from the data memory, that this data out?
Yeah, is that what goes back to the PC?
So the question is, does that go back to the PC? So you're thinking of a call, we're storing a return address, so how does that go back to the PC? So the return instruction is indeed going to have to take that back to the PC. The call instruction, well, we're going to our immediate value, so this immediate is what's going to have to go back to the PC, which we'll get to and when we talk about PC update. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Someone? No. Yeah.
So like for an ALU, like ALU PD, like don't we need also a mask for the immediate? Because like it's possible like that the RP will have
all the question is for ALU A or ALU? So the question is, how do we deal with doing an offset from RB? That is what our ALU does. We can have RB going into ALU B and our offset going into ALU A, which allows us to do that computation. You seem still confused. Okay, yeah.
So what's happening in the data memory is there any call instruction that is the value is being written to, or the next instruction is being written to the new stack pointer?
So the question is, during a call instruction, the address of the next instruction is being written to where the new stack pointer will be? Yes. Okay. Other questions? Okay, so This is our memory stage, and then we need writeback. So writeback is where we write registers. And there's two write ports. And the way our textbook organizes things is they have decided that the E port is used for the ALU results that we write back. So like for add, and also for like our stack operations. And the M write port is going to be used for values that come from memory, like pop and MR move queue. So the most straightforward way of setting it up would be like this. And this would have, this would be RA is the common case for dest to M, and RB is the common case for dest to E. This is something about that organization. Yes, your question? So the question is, what's E for? So in this diagram here, E is used for values that come from the ALU. So the E is for execute, the stage where the ALU belongs. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. And our common case is when we're writing to destem, it's an RA. They've arranged all the instructions that way. So if you remember, we had that weird encoding for MR move queue where RA was the destination, even though that didn't match the order in assembly. And pop also writes to RA, and we have RB for desty instructions. So that's our convention. So again, this is not going to be something which is set up correctly. There's going to be some exceptions. So I'll give you a minute or two. So which of these instructions is something wrong? So I guess I'll start with the first one. So does anyone think there's a problem with not? Can we do not with this? So who thinks, yes, we can do not? Okay. Who thinks, no, we can't do not? Okay. Only a couple volunteers. So I think we can't really do not. And the problem is that RA and RB come from the instruction memory. So they're going to be most likely something that is not regnone. So we're going to be writing to two registers. And I don't see how we can make the value we're writing to those two registers not do something. Right, I can't make it the same value that came out of those registers because, well, if we think of destem here, I have to make the data memory output that. So I don't see how I can ever like write back the value we just read. And if we think of the ALU, it has to be the result of an ALU operation, like an add of it and something else. So I also don't see how we can not change a value. And NOP is not supposed to change any values. Yeah?
So the problem here that we don't have marks that
set those. Yeah, so the problem is that we need a way to set the destinations to regnon. So let's start by assuming that we add that first. So we're going to add a mux here for OXF, for our regnon, and a mux here for OXF. So we're going to add our regnon. Now let's answer the question. Will there be a problem? And there's not going to be a problem for NOP anymore. We can successfully make NOP not change registers. But we're going to still have some extra special cases even after we solve that problem of all these instructions need to write somewhere. Or not all these instructions need to write to both registers. Okay, so who would like some more time? Okay, a bunch of people. Okay, who'd still like some more time? Not, one person, probably not. Okay, so let's start with IRemoveQ. So who thinks we have a problem for IRemoveQ? Bunch of people. Anyone want to volunteer why you think there'd be a problem? Yeah, so our problem is that we want to get this immediate value into the register file here, this immediate value. And if we trace where that goes, it only goes to the register file after being computed on by the ALU or going through the data memory, and neither of those seem like what we want. So we need to do something about that. So one thing we could do is we could take this value here and just connect it with a mux to that register input there. That's not what our textbook does. Our textbook has decided to instead have an option to input 0 for the second input to the ALU, so they can add 0 for the IRemoveQ instruction. Or XOR with 0 for the IRemoveQ instruction, so the ALU result would have the right value. I think that's less straightforward. Maybe there's some performance advantages to doing it. We don't care what you do for the assignment, but we need to do something about it to make the IRemoveQ work. Okay, so questions about that? Yes. The question is, what's the problem? Do we want the immediate to go to ALUA? So the problem is we want the immediate to go to the register file, to go to next.sd or next.sm. And having it go to ALUA isn't enough unless we make it so the ALU can do something where it doesn't change the value. Which, if it's doing an addition, wouldn't be possible before, right? Because ALUB would have something on it. Does that make sense? Or I guess I would say, wouldn't it be possible unless we can guarantee that ALUB is like zero or something like that? Does that answer your question? Your question? The question is that would only the green box being zero would only set if DestD was set to RB. Yes, that is the layout, but the layout of the instruction is RB for I remove Q. I believe is the one that's set, so that should be fine. Yes, your question.
For the two next R statements, those are running to registers.
For the two next R. So the question is next R DestM and next R DestE are. Represent writes to registers? Yes. So remember, to prepare a write to a register, we need to say which register we want to write to, which is the single like destm. We need to say what value we want to put there with a single like next r destm, which in HCLRS, this would be reg destd and reg input m. Sorry, reg input m and reg dest m and reg input m would be the pair I just mentioned, and the other one would be reg destd and reg input m. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Other questions? Yeah.
I just want to clarify. They both instructions have a problem. I just one has an X and one has a check mark.
The question is one has an X, one has a check mark. Yeah. So sorry, not had a problem, but we fixed not had a problem, which was we couldn't write to no register, but we fixed that, and we're considering all the instructions with that fix, because it would actually turn out that all the instructions except pop need to not write to two registers. And I want to avoid that boring solution. Does that make sense? But yeah, it's a good question, yeah. So indeed, not had a problem, but we're going to assume we're working with we can specify regnon solution to keep things, to avoid the trivial answer that most of these are broken. Okay. Other questions? Okay, so let's think about M remove Q. Who thinks we would have a problem with M remove Q? And I think M remove Q is fine. It's a bit tricky because it writes to RA, but that's fine because that's actually how it's encoded, even though that doesn't look like how it should be encoded from the assembly. So M remove Q should be fine with this as long as we can have that regnon for DestD. R move Q. Who thinks there's a problem with R move Q? So I think R move Q is fine as far as what it has to write to registers. We don't want to write anything to registers, which fortunately with this change to be able to specify regnon for both, that's fine. Add Q. Who thinks there's a problem with add Q? And I think Q, again, as long as we don't write to destm, should be no problem. Pop Q. Some people think there's a problem with pop Q. Okay. So someone want to tell me what would we have problems with pop Q?
You need to update the value for RSP.
So we need RSP. So we have the same problem we had for source B, where we needed to read RSP. Here we need to write RSP. So we probably want to use DestD for that, but it's not a possible input. So we need to add RSP as an input, and that's going to be true for not only pop, but all the stack instructions, because it's not in the instruction. So we end up, in addition to needing write disable, we need the stack pointer for DestD, because all the stack instructions need to compute a new value of it, which means we need to store the new value of it in the stack pointer, not in some random register or whatever RB was in the instruction. Yes? Is there a reason we use F for regnon? That's just what our textbook chose, because it matches the encoding. Other questions? Yeah.
Where would we add the RSP on the previous, like on the one that we did?
Where would we add the RSP? So I have our completed diagram, and the RSP is here. Yes. What?
When do we
use dest m? So our textbook's convention is that everything that comes from the data memory is written using dest m. Everything else is written using dest e. In your HCL assignments, you are welcome to do whatever you want as long as the value gets written. You can use dest e or dest m, your choice. Does that answer your question? So here's one fixed version of it. So I have a mux done here, and I have a case for IRMove Q we mentioned, that for IRMove Q you want to take this constant and write it back. We also have RRMove Q, where you want to take RA and write it back. So that's another case that's going to need a special case. Or we can use our textbook's design, where they said, gosh, that's kind of complicated, so let's do the trick where we can add zero to things, which will solve both IRMove Q and RRMove Q with one less mux input. You can do whatever you want, but this is what our textbook chose to do just because it's slightly simpler. Yes?
Can you explain the zero thing? Because I'm really confused about it.
Question, can I explain the zero thing? So if we're thinking about, so this is our textbook's design. If we're thinking about IRMove Q, IRMove Q is going to want the immediate value here. So this should have the immediate here. So if we're doing IRMove Q dollar I to RB, the immediate is going to be went there. And if we trace this signal back, this means that it has to come out of ALU, which means the ALU needs to compute it, which means we need to be able to take two values and get it. But one of those values can be the actual immediate itself. So we just need to do some operation which produces the immediate. And if our ALU just does add, subtract, XOR, and so on, then that means that we probably want a zero for that other operation. Then we can choose to do an add or an XOR. So that's what our textbook chooses to do. So that's how we do IRMove Q, and we have the same problem again on RRMove Q. So we have RRMove Q RA RB. We're going to want the value of RB here, and that comes out of, sorry, value of RA here, because we're storing RA into RB. And that comes out of here. That can go into this ALUA. And again, we add zero to get that. Does that answer your question? Okay. Question is, what's the PC plus 9 part here? This is the PC plus 9, that's the return address for a call. It's PC plus 9 because the call instruction is 9 bytes long, so the byte after the call instruction is 9 bytes after the PC. Yes? So you say after it goes to data out, destination M. So if we're thinking of a call instruction, which is all we use PC plus 9 for, then this data out won't be used because we're writing to the data memory instead of reading. We do read that value eventually with a return instruction, probably, but that's going to be have to be handled not with the register file because the return instruction doesn't use the return address to update the register file. Does that answer your question? So the question is, when the output of the data memory goes to destination M, it goes to the next destination M here, it has to be written to something. We have this option in dest M here to select reg none to say ignore that input.
So
the question, in the case of call, we'd always pass 0xf to destem? Yes. Yeah.
Why do you add 9 to the PC? Would that bring you to the end of the call instruction?
So the question is, wouldn't adding 9 to the PC bring you to the end of the call instruction? Yes. And if we think of what, if I call a function and then return, I don't want to return back to the call, I want to return to just after the call. So that plus 9 is enabling that. Other questions? Yes, back there.
Is the PC plus 9 calculated by ALU, or is that just...
The question is, where is the PC plus 9 calculated? It's exactly this valpy here. Yes, because it's what we would normally calculate if it was not an instruction that jumped to go to the next instruction. Other questions? Okay, so we have our two versions of writeback. So one where we don't do the add zero trick and we just take our immediate, or one where we don't. Either works. This is what our textbook has, so point it out. And then we have our final stage, which is the PC update. So we choose the PC for the next cycle, and usually this is that valp we've computed earlier, but we have some exceptions for conditional jumps, calls, and returns. So I'll just here, so we have our immediate value, something from the instruction for jump and call. We have for return, we're going to read the return address out of the data memory and send it to the PC register. And then we have the common case where we just add an amount like you did in the lab last week. So questions about PC update? Yes. Second case, when we have a return, we're going to read the return address that was previously stored by call from the data memory and send it to the PC register. Yes.
Which is the one going from instruction memory? Is that just like immediate?
The question is, the one that comes from the instruction memory, is that the immediate? Yes. So that would be the immediate from a call or a jump instruction. Other questions? Yeah.
So for jump, the PC just becomes the jump address before you go.
The question is, for jump, the PC becomes the jump address. Yes. For an unconditional jump, that's what the PC in the next instruction is the address from the jump.
Yeah.
Other questions? So let's do a little exercise here. And yeah, I can. So we have these set up. So let's think about what do the muxes actually do for some instructions. So like, how are they set up to work? We're going to start with this add R8 R9. And I've labeled, and this is sort of how I'd go about this, I've labeled what's going to be on each of these signals. So we have R8, RA is going to be 8, RB is going to be 9. That's not the value of the register, that's the index of the registers. We don't know what's in them. And because source A is 8, the value coming out of here is the actual value of register 8, which I represent with sort of this array R of registers index 8. And we also presumably are going to want to get R9 out of here for ALUB. And we're going to have our addition happening. So we're going to get our addition result on this wire here. And we also have PC plus 2 and so on. So the question is, we have a bunch of muxes here. What do they all do? And I have the list of the muxes. So I have the mux before the PC, the mux before dest M, the mux before dest E, the mux before ALUA and ALUB, the MUX before the data memory in, data in, and the data memory address in. So what should those all be? So who'd like some more time? A couple of people. Address in here, what that is, that's the address input to the data memory, that's where the data memory would read or write. Access, so the adder in is the address where the data memory is going to access memory, if it's doing a read or a write. Okay, so let's see, so let's start with the PC. So who thinks we have this MUX on the PC, we have three different inputs, bottom, middle, and top. Who thinks we'll use the bottom input? Okay, middle, top. Okay, so everyone who has an opinion thinks it's the bottom input, which I agree. So the bottom input here is plus the instruction length. So if we have an add instruction, what do we do after the add instruction? We're going to go to whatever follows in assembly. So that's plus 2 bytes. Because that's just how long it is in our encoding table. So we're going to have our bottom input thing. And I didn't actually ask about source B, but for source B, we better read from R9 and not RSB. Yes? The question is, what's the top input to the PCMux for? That's for calls and jumps. That's where the address in the instruction is that we just read from the instruction memory. Answer your question? Yes.
Does that and bracket mean you're accessing the memory of that instruction?
The question is, does the M brackets? Yes. So I use M as a like array of the contents of memory and R as an array of the contents of the registers. The general purpose program registers as my shorthand here. Yes?
So the top one would be for calls and jumps, and the middle one would be for returns?
The question is the top one's for calls and jumps and the middle one's for returns? Yes. Of the PCMux inputs. Okay, so for source B, we better be using R9 because we don't want to read from the stack pointer. How about for destem? Who thinks we have a top and a bottom input to destem? Who thinks we should use the top input? How about the bottom one? Good, we have consensus. We don't want to write. We want to send our regedon. How about for dest? Who thinks we should use the top input? The middle one. The bottom one. Okay, good. We have consensus. We want to write to R9 and not to some other place. Okay, so how about ALUA? We have a top, middle, and bottom input. Who wants to use the top input? Middle. Okay. And I believe that makes sense because that's the only one which has a register value. And similarly, we're going to use the top input for R9. Okay, so how about our next on our list is our data memory in. So that would be this mux here. So top input, bottom input, some other answer, a couple people, doesn't matter. So hopefully it doesn't matter, and why doesn't it matter? Because we're going to tell the data memory not to do anything with some other signals. So it shouldn't matter what we set that to, because the data memory shouldn't be doing any work. And the same is going to be true of our data memory address in. Because we're going to tell the data memory not to do anything, it shouldn't matter what that is. So questions about how I set these muxes here? Yes, back here? Yeah?
When you say calls with data memory not to do anything, is that like 0 for write and read? Or?
The question, when I say tells not to do anything, that's 0 for write and read, ideally. Other questions? Yeah, back there. Yeah, you.
Is there like an easy way to know what data memory is doing like inside the box of data memory, like just in any given function?
Is there a question? Is there an easy way to know what data memory is doing inside the box of data memory? I don't even mean by that.
Like,
if we're thinking of HCLRS, we have a mem read bit and mem write bit input, and if those are both 0, it's not doing anything besides outputting a dummy value because we have to have a value. Is there an easy way to know if it's dummy or not? So you mean like if you're writing HCLRS code?
Yeah.
You would know because you set mem read bit and mem write bit. Yeah. Your question?
For the box before PC, the first option, don't we want to jump directly to the value C that's in the first byte of instruction? Is that the memory of that?
The question is, don't we want to jump directly to the first byte of value C rather than the memory of that? Yes. So when I say memory of PC plus 1, that is part of the instructions encoding. If I just said CP plus 1, that would be part of the current instruction. So when we do the jump for a call, we don't want to go to the middle of the call instruction, which is what going to PC plus 1 would do. We want to read something from the call instruction and go there. And that's why I wrote memory at PC plus 1, not PC plus 1. Does that answer your question? Yes, your question.
The
Sorry?
When we go into the last two.
So these, the question is, can I go over these last two? So we have our two inputs to our data memory. So the first one is going to control if it's writing, what it would write. The second one's going to control if it's reading or writing, where it would do that. But for this instruction, we should disable the data memory from doing anything with its control signals, which we know is read-enable and write-enable control signals. So it shouldn't matter how we set those. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Yeah, back there. What? So the question is, what's the input to NextStartSM? So it's a value we don't care about. In HTLRS, we define it to be zero just to have it be defined. But it shouldn't matter what it is. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay. So let's do, how about another version, arm of Q. Okay, who'd like some more time? A bunch of people. Okay, who'd still like some more time? So I'll start with the simple one. So our remove queue doesn't do anything special with what next instruction we run. So we use that bottom input of the PCMux. It doesn't write to any registers. So we're going to use the OXF input for Desti and Destm. We want to read from RB not from the stack pointer, so we're going to use the top input for source B. And we want to take RB and add it to our displacement. So we want the output here of the ALU to be our D plus RB, which we also want to be the address input. So that means that we need to have D coming into the ALU and RB coming into the ALU. And we also want the ALU's output, not that bypass signal coming into the address signal. And we want to store RA, not the PC plus 9. Yes? Question is, wouldn't we want to add the memory address in the offset? So the rmoveq instruction is rm moveq d some register rb into ra. So we need the value of the register rb. That's probably an address. We add it to D, and that's the address we actually want to access memory at, and that's what I'm trying to do. Does that make sense?
So the memory, so we still want the value of RB, not the memory?
The question is, so we still want the value of RB and not the memory at RB? So we don't do the memory access until after we've added D to the value in RB. Does that answer your question? Yes. So the question, so you're saying R move Q, isn't that move DRA into?
I mean, shouldn't it be like moving RA into?
Shouldn't it be moving DRA into RB? That is not how it is written in the encoding table, unless I have made a mistake.
Like RA into the DRB.
So isn't it RA into DRB? That is not how it is encoded. So our textbook authors have chosen to make this logic here around the ALU simpler. That rmoveq and mrmoveq are going to have their memory address specified using RB. Even though this means that some instructions have RB first in assembly and some have it second. Does that make sense? So in the encoding table, if you look at it, it has the wrong order for, sorry, you're saying another thing, which is not what I was talking about. But that I am writing my assembly wrong because I just wrote this in the wrong order because I meant to write, and let's see if I can write this cleanly, RM move Q RA to DRB. Yes, that is what I meant to write. Sorry about that. I just did the wrong order of the operands. Yes. And DRB is the memory address. Does that answer your question? And sorry, I was thinking of the wrong. I was not putting the destination last like I should have. Yes? So the question is, why does D go into ALUA instead of ALUB? For an addition, it doesn't matter which one we use, and that's how we configured it before. Like, we'd have to add an extra mux for basically no gain if we wanted to, like, we could set it up so we swap the order between ALU and ALUB, but we'd have to, like, add an extra mux, which doesn't seem very useful. Yeah.
So, like, D plus RB is going to address.
Question is, D plus RB goes to address in? Yes. D plus. Other questions back there? Why is dest M 0? Because we're writing memory. So dest M is an input to the register file. So all it can do is write to a register. The reason it's called dest M for memory is because we're writing a value from memory to a register, which is not something rmoveq does. Yes, anyone else? Yes.
What about
What goes to data n? Data n should have the value of Ra, the thing we are writing. Other questions? So in the data memory, it's taking in RA and writing it to the address specified, yes. And data out doesn't have anything useful. Other questions? Yes.
What does that say under the data memory, the function
of oxen? Oh, sorry, this is supposed to be, this is a badly written D plus the value of RB. So let's write D plus RB is value. Does that make sense? Which is still ugly, but maybe clearer. Okay, so that's on setting muxes. I think given that people usually had consensus on answers, I'm not gonna, I have like slides for several more of them without answers, because I usually don't go through them. So we're going to talk about introducing our next topic, which is, so far we've done this single cycle processor design, where we run one instruction per cycle, and we're going to advance to doing more work. And to talk about how we're going to do that, I'm going to start with a different problem, which is doing laundry. So I want to do laundry. I have a load of lights and darks, so I put my lights in the washer, move them to the dryer, fold them, and then I can finally start my darks, put them in the washer, move them to the dryer, and then fold them. And it ends up taking me, with my very fast washer and dryer, like 3 hours to do laundry. Is there a way I could do this faster? Yeah, so the problem is after the washer's free, I could put the colors in. I could do something like this, and I could even fit an extra load in the same time. Right, that the observation is that, hey, there's all this time here when the washer and the dryer and my folding table aren't doing anything. They have plenty of room, plenty of time to be doing stuff. I should take advantage of that. So if we look at this, you might say, okay, so I made this like 3 times faster, but I didn't quite. So we have some waste, right? We still have some time when I look at the washer where, I'm not getting full utilization of the washer. I have some time I'm spending where, marked in red here, where, the washer isn't always used. Where even if I keep going as fast as I can't always use it. And the problem is that the dryer is too slow. And this is kind of unrealistic, right? If you think of a normal dryer, it's probably more like this. And there's going to be a whole bunch of time when my washer is just faster than the dryer. So I end up, having all this time where, even though it's much better, I'm still kind of waiting. And what this means is that if I think of how long it takes me to do a load of laundry now, it's slower. That if my goal was to do a load of laundry as fast as possible, this is slower than what I was doing before. And I say, wait, why? Well, because of that wasted time, that time when the washer's not available. So if I look at, or when the washer's not being used, that's time when the dryer is something I'm waiting for. So if we think about how long it takes to do my second load of laundry, here it takes 2.1 hours, a bunch of which is wasted time. And if I was doing one load of laundry at a time, it was 1.8 hours. So I made doing each load of laundry slower. So from a perspective of how long does it take to do a load of laundry, this is less efficient. But I think all of you would agree that you'd prefer to do laundry this way. You're not going to fall for this argument that, oh, but it takes you longer to do a load of laundry, therefore it's worse. Yeah. You're not going to go back to our original proposal for doing laundry here. And we're going to call this idea of doing one thing, then the next, on our washer. So, like, our washer, like, goes from the first load to the second, and then our dryer goes from the first to the second. This idea is we're going to call a pipeline, that we're going to do the first step of our pipeline, doing the washer, then move to the second step, and while we're doing the second step for the first item, we can start the second item, and so on. So this idea is going to be called a pipeline, and we're going to apply it not to laundry, but to our processor with the stages we've seen. And our hope is that we're not going to make instructions run faster from this perspective, right? If we take the time it takes from beginning to end, they're going to be slower. But we're not going to care because this is not the number we care about. We don't care actually how long it takes to do the instruction from beginning to end. What we care about is how fast we can finish each additional instruction, or in this case, each additional load of laundry. So previously, the time between loads of laundry was that 1.8 hours, and now it's this less than 1 hour, the time between when I finish folding that, which you might observe is also the same as the time between when the dryer finishes each load or the time between when the washer finishes each load, just because things get backed up. And we call this the throughput. So I have a very high of what we call latency, the time it takes to do one from beginning to end. So I've increased that, in fact, but I've also improved my throughput, which we'll typically measure in units of work per time. So I'm doing 1.2 loads an hour, even though, you know, if I look at how long it takes to do a load, it's more than an hour, but because I'm doing parts of them at the same time, I'm going to get more done. And we're going to want to do the same thing with instructions, that we're going to do multiple instructions at a time. So even though each instruction is going to take a long time, as far as this rate, this throughput at which we finish instructions, it's going to be much better. So questions about this latency versus throughput idea? Yes. So the question, latency is the time it takes for one of them to finish? Yes, the time from beginning to end. Whereas the throughput is the time between when we finish, which is the same as the time between when we start, or if you look at any stage in the middle. Once we get started, like we're doing this sort of regular pattern where we're bottlenecked by the slowest part, which in this case is the dryer, right? I'm always waiting on the dryer. I'm either waiting to put something into the dryer or waiting to do something that lets me put something into the dryer or waiting to take stuff out of the dryer because it's the slowest part. Yes? So the question is, the throughput will always be equal to the amount of time it takes for the longest instruction. So I wouldn't call it instruction, the longest stage. So when we have apply this to circuits, we'll call each of these steps stages, and they'll look remarkably like the stages we talked about, and the longest one of those is going to determine our overall performance. And so next time we'll talk about applying this to circuits. We'll start with not the processor, but some simple let's multiply by three with two adders example. Yes? Sorry?
Why is it always for the washer not right instead of white? Why is there that gap?
Why is there this gap here between whites and colors? The assumption is that I'm doing lots and lots of loads, so I have a prior light green load too. Because when we're talking about throughput, we care about when we're doing all the work we can, right? Not just one or two things.